Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. We're in the second hour of this live broadcast. I want to welcome you back to the program and a big thank you to everybody who is in our TNT chat room, mixing it up, keeping the memes and the opposition research. There's a lot of good information in there. That's who want to hang out during the live broadcast. That's where all their smartest people in the room are, in our TNT chat community. See a few familiar faces in there. Great to see you guys. Keeping it real as always. Now let's pivot back to two things: the Middle East, but also to the United States. How these two issues come together. I want to welcome onto the program from Hotspot Media, Nico House, joining us right now on the live link. Nico, great to have you back.
Great to be back, Pat. Appreciate you.
I saw your latest offering up from Hotspot, basically explaining to everybody what's actually going on in Rafah. It's an incredible chess match that's going on. In a lot of it's playing out in the sort of propaganda sphere with Netanyahu, between Washington. I want to talk about that because you've got a good read on this, Nico. And also want to talk about these student protests in America and how they're being vilified. The media manipulation that's going on is really unprecedented on this. But right now, like, what's your sort of vantage point on what's happening right now in Gaza?
So in Gaza, everybody's aware at this point that the attack in Rafah by Israel has begun. And right before this attack started, they started dropping leaflets telling them to run effectively a little bit to the west, north. Right, literally, it's the only thing they have in between them. It's Al-Mawasi, and the only thing they have in between Al-Mawasi and those Palestinians would be the Mediterranean Sea and then the border of Egypt. Israel is labeling this another humanitarian safe zone, but it's important to remember they labeled Rafah a humanitarian safe zone. In fact, that is why there are about 500,000 Palestinian refugees there currently, because all of them came from northern Gaza after Israel dropped leaflets saying that Rafah would be safe. And now they're telling them, well, actually, no, it's not actually safe. And once again, there will be no consequences. But now they're pushing them to the corner where there's only the sea and the border of Egypt. So now it's almost like you said, a chess move where they're now going to basically force Egypt to take those Palestinians by up at least 500,000, probably a little bit more than that. And which would, of course, require the United States to get involved in forcing them to do so. Or they're going to bomb them into oblivion. Either way, Israel gets what they want, which is obviously the beginnings of the extermination of the Palestinian people in Gaza.
So this, what you're describing is basically as ethnic cleansing and under the threat of hard force, basically. How many people are we talking about? So you're talking about 500,000. Israel said to prepare for the evacuation of what? They're telling them 250,000. It's more than that, isn't it?
They started out, they said 100, actually one IDF spokesperson said 100,000. There's no estimates that say 100,000 because everybody knows at this point there were, I mean, there was more than 500,000 refugees that went there, and there were already actually people who also lived in Gaza. So not only do you have the refugees who are being forced to leave, but the people who are living in Rafah are also being forced to leave, and they thought that they once again were in the safe zone. So a lot of them actually weren't prepared for this. But unfortunately, Rafah was just the last stop on the quote unquote humanitarian safe zone train that that Israel sent those Palestinian refugees on. They kept forcing them down south. Every time they would force them down south, they would say, you know, X area is a safe zone. Then they would bomb it. Then they would say another area is a safe zone. Then they would bomb it. So with this Rafah situation, the reason it was such a big deal to such a degree that even the international community, even the allies of Israel were like, bro, don't do this. It's specifically because they're like, there's nowhere else for them to go. And you're going to, one of two things are going to happen. You're going to kill them, which is not going to be a good look. And we really can't really defend you anymore after that. Or you're going to force Egypt to get involved. And it's kind of unpredictable as to which way it would go as far as Egypt, because Egypt is already dealing with a lot of the responsibility caused by this conflict and other wars that Israel is responsible for. And you know, they're claiming that it's supposed to be the small scale operation. If you've seen the videos already, it's not the case, but it's going to be a bloodbath. And even Israel knows it's going to be a bloodbath, because this tiny Al Jazeera operation that was set up in the area, they went out of the way about 5 or 6 days ago to remove all of that and confiscated all their equipment. So now Al Jazeera has zero operations there, because it's obvious if it was going to be some small, precise operation, one, that would be completely abnormal for Israel, because it's never small and calculated and precise, right? There's always civilian casualties. But two, they didn't want anybody covering it. They did not want anyone covering this bloodbath.
That's a big indicator right there. And this has been a sort of recurring theme with the targeting of journalists throughout the last 7 months. I don't know what the total is at this point, but it basically exceeds anything that we've ever seen in any major conflict in this short space of time. So the fact that they're turfing out Al Jazeera, which has been sort of the biggest international media outlet that's given a more of a objective, giving the Palestinians a fair and objective coverage on this, that says a lot. That says that, like you said, Nico, they don't want anyone to bear witness to what is potentially going to happen.
And you can make an argument that it's largely because of Al Jazeera's coverage and during this conflict that forced BBC and other major media conglomerates to actually take a closer look at what was taking place, because the words you can lie about, but the videos you can't deny. So that sparked a lot of investigations into the claims of Israel, like Hamas being underneath hospitals, Al-Shifa Hospital, for example, and then BBC and other news organizations debunking those lies by Israel. And that's largely because of footage that was caught by Al Jazeera. That's why not only have their operations been taken out of the area, but they've literally been killing Al Jazeera journalists. And if where they're not killing the journalists themselves, they're targeting their families.
Yeah, and we learned from the AI Lavender program that was leaked about what they call Daddy's Home or something like this. They'll follow them till they get to their house, and then they'll hit the home, and in many cases have what they call suspected Hamas fighters. I think that based on those reports later, putting two and two together, Nico, that the Israelis have used the same tactic to kill journalists and their families. And this has happened on a number of occasions. I mean, listen, there's no shortage of war crimes for the doc.
Well, actually, no, I would say it's worse, Pat. It's worse. They wouldn't need an AI, because my assumption would be that, like most countries, if this family owns this home, it's public record. They don't need to use AI. These families would break a story. They would go viral for something on Twitter, and then all of a sudden their families would be gone. Like, it would happen like almost the next day or 2 days later. So it's not even like they would need the AI to follow them home. A lot of this is just public record, and then Israel using that to their advantage to bomb these families. And then in some cases, bombing those families, they were going out of the way. Like, you know, they've been bombing Gaza, but they're bombing in parts. But then a family would be bombed completely out of the way and out of the pattern of the other bombs that had been dropped.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we've seen this on a scale that is just unfathomable. I thought I saw the worst in Syria over that period of 10 years or so. This has just taken it to another level. It's not a safe profession, journalism, especially in that type of environment. But the World Press Freedom Day, Nico, last week, it's not a lot of airtime given to that issue. Tony Blinken and others weighed in on World Press Freedom Day. They had a lot of great platitudes to share with everybody. But we're not taking it seriously, unfortunately. Let's shift over to the U.S., Nico. What do you think about the U.S. student protests at campuses across the country? First impressions, general feelings.
So, first of all, clearly they're justified, given what we're seeing today right now in Rafah, right? I feel like everything that we've seen has been justified. I've seen the weird little bickering online where some people, even leftists, are trying to suggest that these protests were paid for by somebody. I'm like, guys, I've been to an elite university. I graduated from the University of North Carolina. It actually doesn't take much for these protests to get organized. And to be quite honest, wherever there's an excuse to not go to class, and I'm being so serious, if there's an excuse to not go to class, a lot of people will jump on board with an issue. It doesn't take much. But what's important to see is how peaceful it was until it wasn't. And the only reason that it stopped being peaceful was either because police got involved or Israeli counter-protesters got involved, and then the police did nothing about this. That was that's probably been the most interesting thing to see. And what's been more interesting to see is the Zionist politicians' reaction to this, and even some of the quote unquote the SJW rights reaction to the counter protest. So in one case, you had Tom Cotton, who was cheering on. He was literally calling for vigilantism against these protesters. And then he got what he asked for and didn't condemn the violence. A lot of these conservatives who condemn violence from the left, quote unquote, like the BLM, how dare they be so violent? They're beating on so-and-so. Look at this video. Look at this. Now those videos were going viral, but now you have people calling for violence on Twitter. They're getting the violence that they're asking for. Then they're cheering it on. Like, they're not even pretending like they don't support the violence against these protesters. And they've given up even pretending that the protesters themselves started the violence. That's what's scary. They're like, yeah, we know that it didn't start it, but we don't care. We are cheering on violence because of the issue that they are protesting for. We know that they're not violating any constitutional right. We know they're not breaking any law. We know they're not doing anything wrong. In the majority of these cases, there was even an investigation done, because remember, there was a lot of claims that a Hamas flag was waving at some of these protests, specifically in Colombia. There was an investigation done by, it was either NBC or ABC, don't quote me, it was one of the two, and they couldn't find a single example of a Hamas flag being flown, despite the fact the media kept running with this narrative. So they haven't done anything wrong. And yet these politicians and these right-wing SJWs, they don't even care. They're like, yeah, well, it doesn't matter. We just don't like what they're protesting. And therefore, everything is game, including violence, including state-sanctioned violence, which is just once again exposing the hypocrisy of these neocons on the right. That they're no different than the liberals that they're always calling out. They're the exact same. That's probably why they hate them so much. They're seeing themselves in the mirror.
Yeah, you call it right-wing SJWs. That's a good term. Very fitting. A lot of people are calling it the woke right. They're demanding a safe space, not just a room on campus, but the whole campus, Nico. And not just the whole campus, the whole section of Manhattan needs to be a total safe space. So it's funny how they did this. They said that they immediately mischaracterize it as Hamas rallies. They've been doing that for months. And so then they say they're terrorist sympathizers, ergo terrorist sympathizers. And then they extend that to these are terrorist sympathizing anti-Semitic rallies or protests, and they're violent on top of that. Please bring the police state in to shut it down. Forget about their First Amendment, Nico. Needs to be shut down. It's a menace to society. That's the logical kind of progression on Fox News.
Pat, they weren't even saying it was violent. That's the part that's crazy. They were literally like, I just don't feel safe. And listen, Pat, I understand, like, if I'm a black man, for example, and I'm walking around saying I don't feel safe because of a particular situation, it's because, well, I'm black. I can paint myself white, but at the end of the day, I'm black. There's not really any hiding that fact. And there are circumstances where I might legitimately not feel safe because of someone being able to perceive that I'm black. Mm. I can't imagine walking around New York University or Columbia and be like looking at somebody that looks like Max Blumenthal, for example, and like, oh, there goes that Jew. Bro, no one knows you're Jewish until you tell them, right? So first of all, if you don't feel safe, you probably were antagonizing somebody. You're probably advertising yourself in some way, form, or fashion in a way that you wouldn't have normally advertised yourself, and you were asking for that type of attention. But the problem is there really hasn't been any documented situations, or at least well-documented situations, with proof that a Jewish student has been terrorized during these protests. However, we have seen plenty of examples of Zionist students attacking physically or verbally or attempting to antagonize these pro-Palestinian protesters. And every time someone says, well, how do you respond to the fact that some of these Jewish students, or these Zionist students rather, feel like they're unsafe? Why is no one asking, how do these Palestinian students feel? How do these Arab and Muslim students feel? Do they feel safe on campus? Knowing that you have a professor who can call the president of a school a terrorist sympathizer with zero consequences. So if you're a student, what chance do you have if something happens, like, I don't know, chemicals getting sprayed on you, like we've seen, being violently attacked by both police and civilians, like we've seen? So has anyone even thought to ask, do they feel safe on campus? And does that actually have anything to do with the fact while they've continued and doubled down on these protests because they're beginning to realize there is no safe space for them as long as Zionists are calling the shots, and then they can always claim victim while simultaneously wielding a power that these Arab students will never be able to wield in order to defend themselves and attack those Palestinian sympathizers.
Not only that, but congressmen, senators calling for students to be expelled. They should never work again. They need to be doxxed. Then Alan Dershowitz, people like this, need to dox them. You shouldn't be working at any law firms, these Harvard graduates and so forth. I mean, putting a price on their head, literally, for the rest of their career. So they are risking a lot, and they should be getting really the support of everybody in my book. But it's even worse, Nico. It's Jewish American counter-protester students or whatever, just walking by campus saying that they feel anxiety, pulling out their smartphone, say, I'm walking a campus, I don't feel safe. They're filming that. They put that up. On Michael Tracy showed us. He saw one of these influencers, and she was doing this at Columbia. She worked for PragerU or former PragerU or something. OAN, and Michael Tracy, who's actually a great on-the-ground journalist, he will actually go and insert himself. He wore a yarmulke. He's not Jewish, but he wore a yarmulke and a Star of David gold chain around his neck just to see if he could attract some negative attention and maybe some harassment. And he said, nobody harassed me. So he said, I was trying to appear to be Jewish.
Actively trying to be harassed, yeah. I looked the part. But that lets you know he like you said, he put on a yarmulke and a Star of David. Like, in other words, if Michael Tracy, he could be Jewish, he could not be Jewish, was walking around campus, no one would know. No one would know that he was Jewish. No one would have a reason to attack him. He would have no reason to feel unsafe unless he went and screamed in somebody's face, I'm Zionist, I'm Jewish, I hate your cause, and let me antagonize you. And then, of course, you probably have a reason to feel unsafe because you just went and antagonized a bunch of people. But that also would have nothing to do with you being Jewish. It would have more to do with the fact that you antagonized a bunch of people. So I just always like to put myself in these situations because, I mean, it's kind of one of the benefits of being Black. It gives you a different perspective because I can just imagine a few Black people, not even a bunch, just a few, walking around campus saying that they feel unsafe during, for example, let's go before the George Floyd riots. Let's look during the Mizzou protests back in the day during the Obama era. And back then, especially considering activists were literally being abducted and disappeared. Like, imagine how the conservatives were reactive. A few Black students were like, I feel completely and totally unsafe on campus. Like a lot of those football players did at Mizzou, for example. What would they do? Mm-hmm. They would, oh my God, they're always a victim. They make everything about race. But with these Zionists, they're just assuming that they're justified in feeling unsafe, which is BS. But then they're defending them and going a step further and saying, well, y'all should react violently, which is crazy because you would never, ever hear any of them suggest that Black people should react violently to any of the malintent that we've experienced in the last few years. Hell, like even the last year. But the last few years of violent protests, riots, they would never suggest that violent reaction to their experiences would be justified. But here, based off of lies, they're suggesting that the violent reactions from these pro-Zionists is justified, and there's no consistency. And it seems to me that there can only be one reason, or I guess two reasons, why there is no consistency. One, because of how I look, but two, because of who they claim they support.
Yeah. Yeah. And also the real cheering on the police. And the police did instigate violence in a number of these cases with these campuses, ostensibly peaceful protests. Nothing on the level of even the BLM protests in previous years. I mean, just to me, it just, it's an anti-war demonstration. I've been to many of them over the years. It just has a Palestinian focus to it. And I think this is the thing that they just can't stand, because they managed to drag students out or to through various political mechanisms to get them into issues that maybe some people would think are not their tertiary issues like trans rights and things like that. Here you have a real issue of global significance that speaks to the human condition internationally, universally. The students immediately recognize this. They have come together. They have very focused demands to the administrations of, and that's the thing that's not being talked about. They're asking for, you know, divestment, boycott, sanctions, to divest from Israeli companies. And so they're not making very kind of wild demands. And these are demands that have been made
before. Nor are they just protesting just for the sake of protesting. They actually have, they have an idea of what a successful end to their protest would look like. And that's usually lacking in these type of protests.
Yeah, that's a point that's just not being covered at all in the press. I want to talk about that. I mean, I want to talk about, I got a couple of other questions. I want to get to this constitutional issue maybe after the break, because that's a deep one. And I want to get your opinion on this. But there are people that are, and it's kind of depressing, but they supposedly in the Palestinian camp, and they're basically saying that these are illegitimate protests because there's a Soros NGO that's present at them, and don't go out. You're not going to do any good. You're hurting the axis of resistance. It's a woke movement. There's a lot of this going on, a lot of infighting and sniping going on. And, you know, I talk to people in the region, Nico, and they're so happy to see students out in America and in big numbers. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that's what they're saying in the Middle East. And then we have this whole other conversation in the West among the various factions of the supposed pro-Palestinian.
Well Pat, various Twitter factions, let's call it what it is, right? Various Twitter factions. Yeah, who are not out there, right? Because if you're going to make a claim like that, so I could make an argument that the BLM protests could, there were protest actions that turned violent that benefited, one, the domestic terrorism claims that Trump did, which helped further domestic terrorism laws, which hurts all of us, but also helped Joe Biden, right? Because that's who was trying to beat, or really helped the Democrats, because that's who was trying to beat Donald Trump or the Republicans. So that would make sense. But who would benefit from funding these massive protests right now in front of this Rafah operation at that, in front of an election that the Democrat, in front of an election that the Democrats are, may end up losing because of this specific issue. When people make these claims, I'm not saying that an NGO wouldn't fund, like a Soros NGO wouldn't fund something like this or make an attempt to, but who are they? You're funding the student organizations that already existed? I'm confused.
Exactly.
And did they fund those massive protests that happened, I don't know, for the last 4 or 5 months? Because there have been massive protests for months now. I feel like we may have only had like a month and a half break or a 2 month break in between the massive protests that had already been taking place. What happened recently is that students began to realize, oh, hold on, my school is way more invested in this situation than I thought they were. So they started organizing, and it was just one school. And then what happens is, because students in colleges, if you ever attended a university in the 21st century, you know, we have like these networks of communication that only we use when you're in college. And things pop up fast and they trend quickly, especially among schools. Like, for example, UNC is a public Ivy League school. So if something happens at UNC, another public Ivy League like Virginia or Michigan, it would become popular there as well. If even like to the point where like super obscure music, like, I don't know, MF Doom, for example, he can go on a college tour with very specific schools and sell out every show because they all have similar tastes, because that's just how college works. So whenever they saw what was happening in Columbia, people decided to express solidarity, especially if they have a pro-Palestine group at their school. Why would they need any funding to make that happen? I don't need any funding to skip class. I promise you, there's not a single person in the month of finals that needs an excuse to skip class. However, you're going to have to now give me a reason as to why you think that a little bit of Soros funding is going to justify them putting their career in jeopardy? Because that's what's happening. No one's talking. These are the kids who are supposed to run the world at Columbia, at Harvard, at Yale, even at Cal, UCLA. These are the kids that are next up. That's part of the reason why these conglomerates and these media conglomerates and these Zionists are perturbed, because they know, hold on, the only way we've been able to maintain this lie is because these are the people that are supposed to help maintain this lie. They're not supposed to be talking about Palestine. Why this? I cannot think of a single time I mean, ever. I literally mean ever, where there were massive protests about Palestine on college campuses, about the war in Afghanistan. Yeah. About Islamophobia in some general form. Yes. About actions that have happened against Palestinian people in the context of them being Arab or Muslim. Yes. But strictly and specifically focused on one, Palestine, but two, divesting from Israel. I've never seen that in my life. And it's at the establishment and for the elite and for Zionist elite specifically, it is at the worst possible locations. The Columbias, the Yales, the Harvards, the UCLAs, the people that are supposed to that they're supposed to pass the torch to are not falling in line, and they don't know what to do about it. So what you do is you cause this violence to happen. And so you almost you cause trauma to warn them, almost like you better not continue because this is the path that you're going down. But all you're doing is showing kids like, hold on. So you're telling me if I don't play a game, this is what's going to happen? Well, now I'm doubling down, because that's just how young people are. Right. They're like, oh, hell no, I'll figure it out myself. But what I'm not going to be is bullied into a position, because at first when it was organic, maybe they looked the other way. But now nothing is organic. And they're like, you're telling me if I'm not a Zionist, I can't have a career. That's not going to fly. So there's almost like a two-pronged issue for a lot of these students that are realizing that their destiny was not as in much of their control as they thought it was.
That's a big education, isn't it, Nico? Because some of us, it took us a decade to work that out. These students are getting the crash course in, you know, a matter of weeks of really that they are anti-establishment, and what the establishment will do, how much they'll lie, how much deceit they'll engage in, how much they'll mischaracterize them just to discredit them and get rid of them. And these kids are really getting that education. I can't tell you, that is something that sticks with you for life. So
kicked out of campus, dragged out of your dorm. You thought you had a dorm and now you're homeless. Like, they're like, what? You do this to a student because of a protest? Yeah, that's exactly what they're telling you. So imagine if you're a professor that disagreed with them. Imagine, I mean, we've seen it over and over again. I think we saw it with Norm Finkelstein back in the day, right? We saw it with, I wish I could remember his name, Danny Shaw from New York. He just lost his job. I think it was that Cooney, he lost his job because of pro-Palestine stuff. We just saw Chris Hedges lose his job at the Real News Network, of all places, for doing real news about Palestine. Which is crazy. I never would have thought that would be a headline that I would see. But they are now they're drawing a line. And they're like, oh, this is the game we're playing. We're not going to play it then. So we're just going to have to flip the table over. I saw a great quote the other day. It said a lot of people, the reason we're at in the world where we are at is because a lot of people wanted to sit at the same tables that the universe put them there to flip over. And now they're realizing that. And I'm seeing a lot of tables get flipped over, and Zionists and the powers that be are not liking it.
No, they're not. They're not. You're starting to see the reaction. So the world's having an autoimmune reaction to this toxin, this problem of corruption and deceit, the lying, all the propaganda, things we've been pointing out and covering for years. Now it's really coming to the surface. Very pleased to be joined right now by Nico House, Hotspot Media. Nico, it's a kind of a new media project that you've put together in recent months. Your videos are going viral on TikTok. People are checking them out on X, Instagram. So how are things going? I mean, you've got a couple of other content creators you're working with as well. You guys are like really on point, helping people like boil down the issues of the big events, the big news stories, so people can actually understand them in a kind of bite-sized portion. But how's the traction, the uptake going on Hotspot?
It's going well, man. You know, we kind of take our hits for our pro-Palestinian content because of, you know, that's just the way the algorithm works. You know, we won't stop covering it though. That's just because that's how we work. We refuse to stop covering it. We've lost our Instagram account. We had to restart because we had 150,000. They just took us off. They said it was because of copyright issues. It wasn't that. They didn't even tell us what the copyright issue was. They just deleted us without a warning. It was right after we uploaded some pro-Palestine content. So, you know, that's part of the game. We always look for new and inventive ways to kind of game the algorithm, have it work in our favor. But we're not silly. We saw Elon with that yarmulke on, man. We know what we're going up against, but we're going to keep on getting that content out because we understand how important it is.
Elon did the October 7th tour, unfortunately, over there with Ben Shapiro and his group of new friends. They set upon Elon to make sure he was on course on this mm-hmm. issue. So yeah, we have to fight the algorithm on that, unfortunately. So this comes down to also this issue of freedom of speech. And I find it very interesting. I want to get your assessment of the current playing field on this. Let's just talk about the United States. So the normally in the last couple of years, with all the cancel culture, with all the sort of Russian disinformation, January 6th, what it looks like a very much a persecution of a lot of activists, pro-Trump supporters. They've gone after them to taking their speech privileges away on every platform. The Twitter files, Matt Taibbi and the others exposed that whole farrago, the amount of government interference on the back end of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram as well, YouTube, Google. So the right wing was really pushing this, saying, you know, we need to preserve the First Amendment. These are Democrats. They want to take your speech away. We're different here on the right. We're conservative. We champion the Constitution. So suddenly the table flipped in the last couple of weeks, Nico, maybe even before that. But they're saying, well, these students shouldn't be allowed to voice their opinions because it's hate speech. So it's uncanny how the irony has set in on this, that all these constitutional conservatives are now calling to restrict the First Amendment because of this issue, because of the Palestine issue. What do you think about this? Have you noticed this, your observations, your thoughts, your feelings?
It's embarrassing, to be quite honest. I mean, they're trying to, so you saw, for example, Elon Musk, speaking of him, go on Twitter and try to equivocate, saying that this is, you know, we're watching the future generation of leftists be anti-Semitic. It's just like inherent in their in leftism. And what that was like a smoke signal, right? It's a lie, but it was like a smoke signal, trying to effectively warn the conservatives who kind of use Elon to push their platforms and gain impressions. It's warning conservatives. We're going to put y'all with them. And we know that your platforms like that you have would be hurt if anyone considers you to be a leftist. But more importantly, you know that your platform would be hurt if you go against anything I say. Because even though they might not believe you're a leftist, they do believe in Elon, or they mm-hmm. want to profit, or based off of what Elon could do. You know, all it takes is for him to pop up in your comment section one time and you could be famous tomorrow. So yeah, that's important to see. And it's also, once again, an egregious lie. For example, I mean, is Candace Owens woke up leftist yesterday or something? Did I miss that? Because last time I checked, she wasn't. Dave Smith, I would probably put him in the category of libertarian, and he's been on the forefront, really, of arguing for against other conservatives for Palestine and calling out Israel. There are a lot of conservatives and libertarians that would not consider themselves leftists. That Justin Amash would be another one. Now, I think he actually is Palestinian, but we know how that goes. Like, he could still be, I don't know, a little bit pro-Israel, maybe like anti-genocide, but still pro-Israel, but that's not the case at all. And he's not a leftist. So we have people lying because they're trying to, they already know how bad it looks, right? That you're cheering on the suspension or the firing of Candace Owens. They already know how bad it looks that Ben Shapiro, who will call every single BLM protest violent and say they should go to jail and et cetera, but then cheer on the violence that's actually happening on behalf of the Zionists against the pro-Palestinian protesters at these college campuses. So there's that. But also, it's kind of scary what we're seeing taking place. Like you said, they keep trying to categorize stuff as pro-Hamas. And I'm not even necessarily against or for Hamas. It is what it is. If you're a fighting force trying to fight against genocide, I'm not going to be the one to criticize how you do it. I'm just not that person. I don't give a damn how you fight genocide. That's, you fight it to survive. And the people will decide what the best way to fight that is. Now, with that being said, the only reason they're saying Hamas is because they associate Hamas with terrorism. And if they're saying you're associated with Hamas, they're calling you a terrorist sympathizer, which is an attempt to dehumanize you, which now makes any acts of violence against you justifiable and forgivable, because it's the same tactic that we've seen used around the world. saying free Palestine is like the least threatening. Like them, if them saying free a country, right? They say free Palestine, free Gaza. If somehow you take that as violence, it is because you are on the side of people that is trying, you're on the side of the people who are trying to actively oppress this group, and you view their freedom as a threat. That is, that's like, that would be an eye-opening, but maybe a lot of people know that. Maybe a lot of these people know, yeah, I don't want equity or equal rights. I don't want the playing field to be even. I don't want them to be seen with the same humanity that people see us. There was an interview with Michael Moore the other day. And I mean, other than the fact that he ended up advocating for Joe Biden at the end of it, that pissed me off. But he was advocating for the protesters, but I actually didn't really like the way he was advocated, because he was, we love the Israelis. We love the, you know, we don't want anyone to think that we're anti-Semitic. We love the Jewish people. But with the Palestinians, it was pity them. It was pity the Palestinians, but we love the Jews. You get what I'm saying? And people are like, well, I don't understand. I'm like, because that is the problem. They're not animals. These Palestinians are not animals. The protesters understand this. The not just at the college level, but the protesters around the world understand this. Other Jewish people understand this. People who have been in, who have lived in these circumstances, or have family who currently live in these circumstances in countries in Africa who are dealing with a different type of genocide, they understand this. But when you have some of these advocates like Michael Moore come out, and what's crazy is, I don't think he did that on purpose, but that is how we have been conditioned. It's love. We love them. We have to qualify with, we love them. We love Israelis. We don't blame them. But then it's pity the Palestinians. We have to support them because we pity them. No, we have to support them because they're humans. And we, this should be unacceptable at any, like, and you should love them. You should say, we are supporting because we love them and they're humans. Just like you qualify whatever you say about Israel with, we love Jewish people and they're humans. That's how it should be, but that's not what we're seeing. We're finding out that the First Amendment does not apply to all people, because they don't view, it's, they say First Amendment apply to man, to humans. We don't view you as that. That's what we're finding out.
It applies to some more than others. They're making it a spectrum rather than something that is very clearly delineated in the Bill of Rights. But just international, you know, just branding Palestinians as terrorists, as Hamas, which our media have done, and I can name the names of the presenters and the anchors and the networks that have done this consistently since October 7th, that there are no innocent people in Gaza. They're all Hamas. They elected Hamas. We've heard all these tropes. But the other thing is that they're Muslims. And that's not 100% true either, because there are Christians living in Gaza as well. But this, so the combination of Hamas and Muslim gives license to, you know, kind of deprioritize them on the human scale and justify an unlimited amount of collateral damage. And so this is a real victory of propaganda, of framing. It's not a victimless crime. It has real results, because that consensus, this has allowed this to go on for 7 months, Nico. 7 months. Previous presidents would have hit the brakes. Even Bush probably would have applied the brakes after 3 or 4 weeks.
If you have to worry about re-election at some point, right? Even if you're a Zionist, you're still worried about re-election. There's a reason that, at least out in public, they try to put out these little feelers for Joe Biden. Oh man, yeah, he's really upset with what Netanyahu's doing. Oh, the Democrats are really kind of are turning about facing on Netanyahu and what Israel, and then they're even trying to scapegoat Netanyahu as if he's the reason all this happening. He might be the conduit, but let's be clear. Israel as a country is a problem. Like, they're upset that he's not genociding efficiently enough. That's basically what they're upset about, because it's taking too long and it's costing too many Israeli lives, when this is supposed to be an issue that was supposed to be taken care of and resolved in just a couple of weeks. That's what they believe. So it's a problem on a huge scale, and the propaganda aspect of it has to be discussed more, because what they're doing is they're implementing a technique that they've already seen be used successfully. When I say that, I mean, there was so much collateral damage in Afghanistan and Iraq that it should make everyone sick to their stomach. It should make you sick to your stomach. Hundreds of thousands upon millions, and the numbers we really don't know. And the reality of the situation is we don't know why there is that. There was that much collateral damage. Like they're saying, I mean, there are numerous reports that their U.S. soldiers killed more civilians than the terrorists were responsible for killing. And we were supposedly there to stop the terrorists from killing civilians. So, but if you link that fear, that Muslim, Arab, black, like all of a sudden, well, if you're not Christian, you can't be that human. And if you're not white, you're definitely not. Oh, now you're Muslim and you're Arab. Yeah, we don't really care. It's sad, but whatever. They weren't mad about the innocent lives lost in Afghanistan and Iraq. That's not why people were protesting the war eventually. It's because it was causing us money. It's because their people, their sons and their daughters and their fathers and their uncles were dying for a war that they didn't understand. But what they should probably be more pissed about is that a couple of thousands we lost, by the way, doing stupid shit like going on patrol around FOBs that like would have never been attacked. The only reason that they died is because they were patrolling an area that didn't need to be patrolled. Because no FOB had ever been attacked. So they're dying for no reason. But the problem is, why was there hundreds of thousands of innocent Afghans and Iraqis killed? And that should be what people are. It's 1,000, bro. Like, yes, every human life holds the same value. You should be pissed about 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 U.S. soldiers that die for no reason. But that piss should, that anger should be multiplied exponentially, knowing that hundreds of thousands of more human lives died unnecessarily because of a war that was based on a lie. And it's not there because of the exact type of propaganda that you described. You're Muslim, you're Arab. In other words, you're not my religion. You're definitely not my race. And therefore your life is expendable. That's just what happens to y'all. And y'all are used to it. And it's sad because even the staunchest anti-war progressive, the staunchest anti-war libertarian, the staunchest pro-peace, pro-human Westerner, they're not angry enough. None of us are. None of us are angry enough. And it's because we've been conditioned to believe that's just how things are for them since we were born.
Yeah, and continue the victims of those conflicts continue to rack up even today because of excess deaths and sickness, depleted uranium, water that's not drinkable, non-potable water. I mean, it's endless. It's endless. But Nico, I mean, this is a very important conversation. I'm glad that you're available to have it with us this week on TNT. And encourage people, visit Hotspot Media, support Nico House, follow him, Real Nico House on X, Twitter. We'll drop the link in the TNT chat community. Thanks for joining us this week.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me on.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. And also a big, big thank you to Leila Haitoum, journalist from Beirut. This has been a powerful broadcast. We expect nothing less. And it's only Monday, folks. Wait till you see what we got for the rest of the week. I'll see you same time, same place tomorrow. All the best, everybody. Take care.